Welcome to the Columbus Metro Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. The forum is where Columbus comes to talk. Every Wednesday, the forum brings together visionary leaders to examine issues that matter. We'd love to have you join us in person. Tickets and information about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. Central Ohio's nonprofits feed families, house neighbors, and strengthen communities, often filling the gaps no one else can. But as funding tightens and needs grow, will they chart their own future or have it charted for them? This week, we explore what it means to lead a nonprofit with courage, even in uncertain times. This week's panelists are Ann Bischoff, CEO of Starhouse; Elizabeth Brown, President and CEO of the YWCA Columbus; Rachel Lustig, President and CEO of Lutheran Social Services; and Denzel Porteous, Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. Our host is Brandy Al-Issa, President and CEO of Habitat for Humanity Mid-Ohio. Let's join this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum. Will nonprofits lead or be led?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to open up with very brief remarks, but I do want to set the stage for us to pivot into our conversation today. And we all know that the Human Services Chamber, led by Michael Corey, who's here today, thank you, Michael, and who was just well recognized by Homeport. Yeah, you deserve that. The HSC has done a tremendous job of courageously collecting data and telling the story that paints the picture around what is the state of nonprofits right now, more specifically the human services sector. Just a few data points that was recently shared. Over 50% of human service organizations are projecting a deficit for the current fiscal year. 90% predict costs will increase. 77% can't meet current demand. And think of that about that. We all know that the demands are going to increase. And 37% report that it's difficult to attract and retain talent. Let's be clear, every nonprofit right now is leading with courage and with perseverance. The question for today is, how are we leading forward, both as individual organizations and as a collective? How are we creating a nonprofit ecosystem that addresses challenges, risks, strengths, and opportunities that puts the well-being and dignity of the people we serve at the center? So with that, we're going to get kicked off, and I want to start with a question. I'm going to start with you, Liz. Talk about, why do nonprofits even exist? What role are nonprofits filling in our community?
Thank you, Brandy. Thank you to all of you for being here. And I love that grounding question. You know, nonprofits really exist because of where systems have failed communities. It's us, up to us to sort of step in and address that. I recently had the pleasure, Ijeoma Oluo is an author and speaker who joined our organization recently, and she said something that has really stuck with me. We were talking about systems change, and she said, not to confuse harm reduction and revolution and the role that nonprofits play in harm reduction. And that is a great way to put it. The role that nonprofits play in our community is to decrease human suffering in the right now. We serve immediate needs because we have the belief, sometimes radically at times, that people deserve to survive and thrive today, even when systems fail them. That is the task and the honor that nonprofits have to fulfill. It's sacred work. But I think what is a challenge sometimes is that we confuse that harm reduction with systems change, which is not the same thing. And nonprofits can't solve all the systemic inequities that exist in our communities. We are here to treat the harm that is occurring. And so we're one part of an ecosystem. We are one part of an ecosystem that also needs to step up and ensure we are changing the systems that have failed us in the here and now.
Anyone want to add on to that?
Add something. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Brandy, for hosting us today. As Liz was sharing, I was thinking about the historic pendulum shift that we've experienced. So we know historically the pendulum has shifted back and forth between what used to be the faith-based community carrying the weight of support for human services, and there was a hard shift back to the government back in the 1960s with the war on poverty. Michael Corey pointed that out at a former forum here with us all. What we're experiencing now is a swift pull the rug out from under you shift back to the unknown, really. But if you look back to Goodwill, organizations that were around before the Great Depression, that means that they survived the 10 years of the Great Depression. What did they do? They were innovative. They were nimble. They created jobs with their community in a moment where there weren't enough jobs to go around. And they pushed up their sleeves and got things done for people. So now the pendulum is really shifting back to us, to your point, the collective. I love what the faith-based community is doing with Yes in God's Backyard, what FRAC, the Funding Review Advisory Committee, is doing to take a deep dive and understand revenue, to find new sources of sustainable revenue for human services in our community. And nonprofits ourselves are going to need to lean in and create new sources of sustainable revenue for ourselves through enterprise. But it doesn't just stop there. Funding alone isn't going to get us through this moment. It's also going to take getting back to the roots. I was at an event last night where Council President Hardin shared a remembrance of chicken dinners in churches and fellowship halls in the days of yore. Everybody showed up for the fellowship, but it was also an incognito way for people who might be down and out to have access to food. And so with this hard shift back to the unknown, my hope is that that mindset we may have had because we knew the government was taking care of food and shelter and all those things, that now we will see our value in supporting people in need in our community, and we're no longer off the hook. So at the very least, I hope there's a significant silver lining that really empowers people to get back to helping the people.
So would you all say, do you think that nonprofits are at a position where they're having to reinvent themselves a little bit based on where we've been, what we've seen, what you just talked about, Anne? Like, are we in a period of reinvention?
If it's okay, I'll take a stab at that.
Yeah, please.
Thanks, Brandy. So Lutheran Social Services made an announcement on Monday that's a little relevant to this discussion. Is we made the announcement that we were selling our skilled nursing facility and two assisted living facilities. These are programs that have been with Lutheran Social Services for several decades. It was a very strategic decision that we made in order to be able to focus our efforts. What our community knows us for here is often faith mission, choices, our homeless shelter and the domestic violence shelter that we provide. Well, we also provide, we have a federally qualified health center and a rather large food pantry network. And while we were balancing that wide range of diverse programming in an era of rapid change, we realized that it was difficult to provide the support to be able to keep those services quality and to keep our staff supported in the way that they needed to be able to do. So we had to, as you called it, reinvent ourselves, or we're in the process of reinventing ourselves to really take this position to say the area where we are most needed is the area of homelessness, domestic violence, affordable housing, community health, and food assistance. And by acknowledging that and driving change, it is our hope that, to Liz's point, where we cannot just provide the service, but we have the space and the breathing room as an organization to be able to recognize those systematic inequities that exist and drive change for the sacred stories of people that we are serving, so that we can advocate on their behalf to help shape our community to be the type of place that it needs to be for those who are on the margins.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rachel. And I think that's hard, especially in nonprofits, to say no to things or let go of things. At Habitat, we've been talking a lot about Jim Collins's hedgehog model. Like, really, what's our core business? What should we be focused on that we can be the best at that wouldn't be there if we weren't doing it? Denzel, did you have something to add?
Please. You hear me? Okay, great. Wonderful. It was like a delay in the beginning. Good afternoon, everyone. I think when I think about sort of how I stepped into the Stonewall organization in the middle of the pandemic or the beginning of the pandemic, the quietness of the pandemic allowed and gave me the opportunity to do some deep sort of understanding of the organization. And I say the quietness of the pandemic because no one was in the office. We had lost some team members. Income had slowed down. People weren't just giving the same way. And I think it was that moment of realizing that we had to rethink how we were supporting our organization and the programs that we were creating and hoping to support. The sort of beginning of diversifying streams of income, right? So we started to look at how are we fundraising, who's giving us money, how are we paying our team members who are not here at the moment, and what is sustainable. I came to sort of the nonprofit space with a business background. And so for me, that was the first thing I thought about was if I was running a business, right, how would I actually make this sustainable if I didn't get money from folks, if the government funding is gone? As an organization, Pride is our largest fundraising event. So during the pandemic, you don't have Pride, you don't have revenue, and you've got to think about those things. And so, you know, I think we are in a moment where, or we should have thought about this a while ago, versus depending on one sort of source of income. But how do we make ourselves sustainable? How do we generate revenue ourselves? I talk a lot about widget making. What are the widgets that our organizations can create so that we can ensure that we are sustainable moving down the pike?
Yeah. Okay, makes complete sense. So we've kind of looked back. We've talked about some of the shifting dynamics. Let's do a real quick lightning round of like a SWOT analysis. So in terms of the collective, the nonprofit ecosystem, what are the strengths? Anyone just chime in.
Our proximity to community is a strength, yeah. That nonprofits directly serve people. So we're uniquely positioned to lead with people at the forefront, yeah. Right? To lead with the needs of people. I think that's a strength.
We have constantly evolved to respond to those changing needs in our area. Agility is definitely one of our defining characteristics.
For sure.
I would say collaboration. We can't do everything ourselves, so we do depend on partners to get a lot of the work done.
Opposite side of that coin, what are the weaknesses that we collectively share or most share?
I think it's really hard to be as close to suffering as we are and not want to do more to respond to it.
I think, honestly, our weakness is that people expect us to be able to solve the systems work that needs to be done. Sort of going back to my initial question, we actually need everyone in this room to be engaged in systems change. And I think that it's very tempting to say these are nonprofits that are directly serving human needs, so they're also responsible for shifting the ground under all of us. That's core to what YWCA, how we think about our mission, is to be able to do both. But it's not really possible for a sector to do both. And so in some ways, our weakness is that we are expected to solve more than one single sector has the capacity to do.
Yeah, and I would just add, I think a weakness is the perception by the larger community that nonprofits will take care of it or other people will take care of it. And it goes back to what I was saying before. We need now more than ever for people to take care of people. There are policies right now that prohibit individuals in some communities from giving food to people on the street, from creating a shelter in their church. So that's something in this moment. This is real. This is happening right now, the heaviness of this challenge. We're going to have to take a look at those policies that free people to serve.
Yeah. So let's shift to opportunities. So I think policy change would for sure be an opportunity. What else is an opportunity?
I would say probably removing the perception of competition or the reality of competition. I think if we are able to work closer together, we would see a lot of our maybe operational costs may be aligned, and there's space to say, come together. Let's see if we can cut back on some
costs. In terms of seeing other nonprofits like competitors versus collaborators.
Correct.
What about threats? What are threats that are on the horizon?
I will say creeping authoritarian tendencies in our culture and in our government. Please invite me back.
Yeah.
Setting the government aside, I actually think there are authoritarian tendencies in our culture that are emerging that scare me. The fracturing of how we consume information, the fracturing of how we relate in community allows us to see people who suffer as people who are not like us. I believe that if we thought every child in the world deserved what our own children deserve, we would live in a utopia, probably. We need to get closer to that. And we are getting further and further from that by day. And it scares me.
Yeah. Any other threats to mention? Rachel, go ahead.
There's just so much that's driving a sense of otherness right now. And whether it's the homeless population or minorities, people of color, that where we're being driven apart in today's society, what are those forces that are drawing us back together to really see that sense that you're a human just like I am. And how do we reinvite that when we're working against such significant propaganda and the pace that so many people are experiencing? That threat's infiltrating every one of our lives and certainly our organizations.
Yeah, makes sense. Did you have something to add, Denzel?
I'm echoing, actually, or maybe I'm contextualizing to say a loss of a sense of humanity or each other's humanity.
Yeah.
I talk about it often with the team. I'm like, we're all different people. We understand the world differently. You're all actually receiving the information I'm giving to you differently. And so I think that's an important thing to remember, that each one of us comes to our humanity as different people. And so it's a loss of our sense of humanity of other people, ultimately. Yeah.
Sorry to take the mic again, but I think it would be crazy not to say funding. The loss of funding is a very, very significant threat. And I think many of us within the nonprofit sector are really struggling to accept the fact that we are going to lose services that save people's lives. And because nonprofits have been so creative, innovative, and agile and figured out ways, I'm not sure that people realize just how difficult it will be to rebuild some of the infrastructures that have taken decades. I have a story that inspires and scares me every day. When I first started at Lutheran Social Services, we had a client at our faith mission office who attacked and very seriously injured one of my staff members. And that team member had been with the organization for 13 years when this happened. He is now in his 15th year at Lutheran Social Services. And he has taken on a greater leadership role. This person understands the homeless population, has a great deal of empathy and respect, and knew what he needed to do to protect himself in order to be able to come back into the environment. He's also supported by a team that's got an average tenure of 10 years. If we were to lose that infrastructure, I can't rebuild it tomorrow. I can't even rebuild that within 10 years. That's going to take a long time in order to be able to rebuild within our community. And that loss, if it happens in one place or another, is going to be very significant to be able to provide that same level of service into our community.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel. That's going to be a good pivot to the next question I'm going to move to, which part of me doesn't even want to ask because I feel I don't, but I also don't want to assume that I'm going to know the answer. So Philanthropy Roundtable recently released a piece making the argument that nonprofits should not be reliant on government dollars, that you lose flexibility, that you have a bunch of regulations, a bunch of red tape, and it really makes nonprofits go away from where they started, which is Anne talked about, like, with the faith-based community. So, I want to, like, can you imagine a world where, as a collective, we're not receiving or reliant on government dollars, especially, I think, the federal dollars? And what are the costs and benefits to that?
We can imagine a world where we don't need government funding. I mean, we can create our own business and support our work in that way. But the fact is that for decades, this funding has been foundational for us. And with very little warning, we found out on July 1 that the state was cutting $1 million a year from our budget. That is disruptive. Other instances of government funding, we were given more notice. The VOCA, the Victims of Crime Act, they told us several years ago when we were receiving $500,000 a year, that we could expect a reduction year after year after year. And here we are several years later, $100,000 for this year, but we were ready for it. The impact that this has is the suddenness of the rug being pulled out from under us. And it does give us opportunities, though, to lean more so into these innovations that we've all talked about.
Yeah, thanks.
I think it also speaks to what our vision of government is and what it should look like. Because my one-word response to what the Philanthropy Roundtable may not be respectful, but that seems ridiculous. Do we believe that everybody in our community deserves clean water and deserves enough to eat and deserves healthcare and a place to lay their, you know, head at night? And if we believe that, then we need something that provides a level of baseline structure to provide that type of support. And we have had a very effective propaganda about the inefficiencies of government and the ineffectiveness of government that has been in our ear for 40 years. And I think we need to remember what government can be and invite that level of discourse back in. Because at the end of the day, what we're talking about is how do we protect people? How do we create a baseline for people to be able? And these types of things are not just good philanthropy. They're good for business. They're good for our social welfare. They're good for safety. They're good for being a part of a community.
Yeah, I mean, I will add that I think there is, that's an abandonment philosophy, like an abandonment of the work, period, to think that government, that it's better for nonprofits if government weren't to be involved. Because what I have found to be true since I started this work almost 3 years ago is that when the government or the markets, right, pull out of community, it's nonprofits who are there, right? Long past any cameras showing up, it's nonprofits who stay in community, nonprofits who are doing public good. And the fact that this, I loved Anne's history about when government started to really serve these basic needs in the mid-20th century. And that coincided with the civil rights movement. There was social agitation around the idea that systems were broken and we had to behave differently as a culture. We had to think bigger, more differently, more equitably as a society. And that's really where this government partnership with nonprofits began. And that is not something to abandon. And actually, I think it is democracy in action that nonprofits help to serve the public good. When I talk about that breakdown in systems, and that's where nonprofits appear, oftentimes those systems have been designed by both government and business. I mean, if we're being clear, and we love a lot of our business partners in the room, but those two structures don't always think about the folks who have fallen through the safety net, and that's what nonprofits are there for. So it is a piece of democracy. I think it is the expression of democracy that nonprofits have been able to partner with government in this way. And so if we abandon that, we are abandoning a really important piece of American democracy, I believe.
Okay. Borrowing from Stephen Covey's concept of operating in your circle of control versus your circle of influence and kind of letting things that are in the circle of concern go, Anne, I'd like to start with you. What do you see being in the circle of control of Star House or the nonprofit ecosystem?
Yeah, good question. Thank you. We're so fortunate in our community to have access to data for informed decision making. We're so fortunate to have corporations in our community. I think of a meeting I had last year with Nationwide, where thanks to their forecasting, they were able to help me see more clearly the writing on the wall for all of us in the next couple of years. And in response to that, we were able to sit down with our wonderful dream team. I have members of my dream team here today, and develop a 5-prong strategy. The first couple are the obvious things, pruning, making cuts in such a way that it doesn't impact services in as much as possible. For us, we were able to trim $1.5 million from our budget this year while actually giving an increase in the number of hours of services for our youth. You can ask me later how we did that. The second thing is fundraising, new strategies. Renee on my team, who's here, our VP of Development, took a look at hidden gems in our donor database. One of those meetings resulted in $250,000 this year that we wouldn't have had otherwise. The other three, the first is taking a look at your assets. So we did an audit of all of our assets, our facilities. We were already renting those out to Ohio State. We asked them to increase their rent this year. They did. But now we have another 26,000 square feet on the south side we'll be able to rent out to the tune of more than $100,000 when we flesh that out fully. The next thing is sharing. Okay, mergers and acquisitions are ill-advised in this economy. But we can share resources to cut costs. We can share, one thing we're talking about is sharing a CFO fractionally with another organization in town to support our financial forecasting. We can share facilities. We can share back office. Something that we've been doing since 2017 is a partnership with the Educational Service Center of Central Ohio, where we pay a service fee in exchange for access to their back office HR. There's a lot we can do to cut costs there. And then lastly, enterprise and earned income. For us, we're so fortunate to partner with CMHA and Finance Fund on an affordable housing village in Franklinton. We'll be able to take what we've learned in the affordable housing space to create even more affordable housing for rent income. But we're also going to be looking into market rate housing as a mission aligned, mission adjacent way to bring in revenue for the organization. And by the way, I think it's a way to get the suburbs involved in the solution. They're not going to have affordable housing in some suburbs in our community, but they will allow for the creation of a social enterprise luxury housing complex that we can use the profits from which to support the organization and the social services that we're providing day to day. So again, so grateful to be in a community where we have advisors, corporations, and others helping us see the writing on the wall so that we can move forward strategically.
That's great, Anne, and it's such a great example of what is in the circle of control for nonprofits, all of these innovative ways to really think about core business, think about opportunities, and think about the way forward. So thank you for that. I will add from YWCA's perspective, in addition to a lot of things that we control internally at an organization, as an organization that we are doing the hard work this year on that front, another piece that we do control that I want to name is we control our mission. Our mission is in our circle of control. And at YWCA Columbus, our mission is eliminating racism and empowering women. And that mission, there were some folks who thought, is this illegal now? Is our mission illegal now in January? That was a real question. And no, it is not. We have control over the mission that we pursue on a daily basis as a nonprofit. Our team, our leaders, our board has that squarely in our circle of control. So when we face these tough questions, we look back, for me, we look back on the legacy of 140 years of YWCA Columbus, the many, many women who have come before us who have faced and embraced very tough challenges. And so we say, while we are always legally compliant, we have a level of risk tolerance for standing in the mission that we've embraced for 140 years. That this is critical to how we show up in community. This is critical to our own version of both system change and serving immediate need. And so that is something that I'm very proud of our organization for standing up and weathering and not giving up.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Central Ohio's nonprofits feed families, house neighbors, and strengthen communities, often filling the gaps no one else can. But as funding tightens and needs grow, will they chart their own future or have it charted for them? This week, we're exploring what it means to lead a nonprofit with courage, even in uncertain times. This week's panelists are Ann Bischoff with Starhouse, Elizabeth Brown with the YWCA Columbus, Rachel Lustig with Lutheran Social Services, and Denzel Porteous with Stonewall Columbus. Our host is Brandy Al-Issa, President and CEO of Habitat for Humanity Mid-Ohio. We'll return to this week's CMC Forum, Will Nonprofits Lead or Be Led? After a short break.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Central Ohio's nonprofits feed families, house neighbors, and strengthen communities, often filling the gaps no one else can. But as funding tightens and needs grow, will they chart their own future or have it charted for them? This week, we're exploring what it means to lead a nonprofit with courage, even in uncertain times. This week's panelists are Ann Bischoff with Starhouse, Elizabeth Brown with the YWCA Columbus, Rachel Lustig with Lutheran Social Services, and Denzel Porteous with Stonewall Columbus. Our host is Brandy Al-Issa, President and CEO of Habitat for Humanity Mid-Ohio. Let's get back to this week's CMC Forum. Will nonprofits lead or be led?
Thanks, Liz. Thanks, Ann. Denzel, how do you see what's in the circle of influence for Stonewall or others?
I lean into everything that's already been said in sort of the conversation about culture within the organization and staying true to your mission. If you don't stay true to your mission, then you can't really do the work or advocate for the extra funds that you see as a necessity. I lean into the notion, again, of collaboration. I think when you're, again, looking at how you can intersect with other organizations to reduce costs for yourself, then you can use that overhead in other places, which is going to be important. Compensation, when we lean into the notion of keeping talent around, it is hard for nonprofits to meet a lot of businesses' salary bands that they have out there. But we have a culture of flexibility that we can potentially lean into. We have a culture of advocacy and excitement that often people are saying, you know what, I will take a couple thousand dollars less because I can do this work in such a passionate way. I often talk about the fact that I am excited to be a professional gay, right? Like I get paid to be gay, and that's amazing, right? But I also accept a lot less in my salary because I can also walk out into the world as my truest self. So I think there are these things that we can control in terms of culture, compensation, and how we show up and connection that I think we should and hopefully probably lean into a little bit more than we have in the past. I just want to turn to one thing. You know, I think the notion about not being dependent on government funding, it's a true statement, right? I apply things from the business perspective. If you know it's coming, that's fine, but you can't always depend on it. You should never always depend on a thing, right? I'm also Jamaican, so the joke is always you have three jobs, right? And so I have a multitude of jobs in relation to my organization. We always have to think about the diversity of the income that's coming in to allow us to do more, right? So thinking about government funding as an offset to the funding that you get from somewhere else is going to really be a critical way to think about it moving forward. But, you know, it's a reality. And it's a change that we should have been preparing for a while ago. And now we're forced to sort of step into the space of figuring it out.
Yeah. So I appreciate the talk around, like, we control our missions and we can stand in that courageously. Let's shift to talking about maybe controlling our future or our destiny a little bit. So, Rachel, I'd like to call on you. Do you have a vision or a picture of what the nonprofit ecosystem could look like? What can we be working towards?
Well, I think it goes back to where we started. What we are what we can and should be driving for is that alleviation of human suffering. And both in the programs in which we provide and in our capacity to lock arms with others to build the right community, the right system to drive us forward. So as you were asking the question, I was thinking a little bit, though, about what was within our influence. And I think it relates to our future, too, is that we always have to recognize that we have options. So for one second, there's been a lot of brain research that's been done on people who are living in poverty. And one of the things that they recognize is just how much of their bandwidth or their mind space is being spent on survival. If you are worried about where your next meal is coming from, or you are worried about where you're going to sleep tonight or how you're going to keep your children safe, that takes up most of the bandwidth within your mind. Many nonprofits also sit in the space where they're working, where their bandwidth is on survival. And so as we think about how our vision is forward, we as nonprofits are going to have to think, how do we make sure that we have some headspace to be able to drive a strategic vision forward? So that's one of the reasons that we made the decision that we made this week, to make sure that we can focus on where we have the capacity to be good. Because our programs are going to be able to do quality work. They do. They make a difference in our community. But it is our proximity to people who are truly suffering that gives us the power to be able to drive the change that we need to for the community. And it's going to be that that's going to drive a vision forward about what type, how we want to be more just and compassionate, how we want to ensure a level of care that the social determinants of health are a part of everybody's experience.
Thanks, Rachel. So, of course, it's the longstanding tradition of CMC to take questions from the live audience and from the virtual audience. And so if you're here and you have a question, please make your way over to the microphone by Doug. If you're watching online, please type your question into the chat. And while we wait for folks to line up behind the microphone and type in their chats, I have one final question for our panelists to wrap things up. So we've talked about leading with courage, standing in our mission, thinking about the future. If you could share in one sentence or less, how are you personally leading in your organization to have that future focus, but also inspire hope and a sense of courage? I know this is a tough question, so like hard to do in like one sentence or less.
Yeah, for Starhouse, we're so lucky to have our dream team of people who are committed. Our values aren't just lip service. We live and breathe them. Do whatever it takes, as long as it takes, create solutions and unconditional positive regard, which is really just unconditional love, making things happen for people. So we're leaning into that, focused on creating solutions and withstanding the current state of things.
I would say that the keys for us are leading collaboratively. So I have an awesome team. They are here. There's a lot more of them than just at this table. Being collaborative with our leadership, because it's not a one-woman show over here, right? And then secondly, though, is accessibility. And our leaders in our organization, including myself, really prioritize accessibility when we lead in general. But this year, where all of our, we have about 240 staff, and they all read the news, and they all feel the pinch of this economy and work at a nonprofit and serve people who are deeply in need. And so one of the things that we've implemented this year is just as much leadership accessibility more than ever before, with staff-wide town halls. I do open CEO office hours. We do site visits at across our two dozen childcare sites, just to make sure that people don't wonder where their leaders are, because that destabilizes their work on an everyday basis.
One of the programs that Lutheran Social Services runs for our community is that we have our community's only domestic violence shelter. And there are days where our beds are full, and we are having to tell people who are in very serious danger of being hurt that we don't have a bed for them. And there is nobody in this community that feels that more deeply than my staff who's on the front lines. And as we enter a period where need is outpacing demand and resources are being contracted, I think we've got to remind our staff that you can't give what you don't have, that you are doing your very best. And this is our opportunity, to Anne's point, to invite others to serve alongside of us. And that is a very, very, very difficult message for these people who care so deeply. But it's a message that we're going to have to remind them every single day.
Those are good. I often tell the team it's hard to be in service and of service to the community, right? So we are part of the community that we're trying to service, at least with Stonewall. And our community is heavily under attack. We've been under attack for quite some time. A lot of times you will hear me say, don't act stupid, just show up. Again, Caribbean household, the notion of don't act stupid is not calling you stupid. It's the notion of showing up with intention and understanding of those around you and what you can do with your own capacity. And just show up. It means you have to remember that if you don't show up, who's going to be there, right? And if you can't show up, who are you tapping to show up? Again, don't act stupid. If you're not going to show up, call someone to let them know that you can't be there. So for me, the way that I sort of hopefully encourage a team every day is I keep showing up. And I explain to them, you don't have to do the same thing I do, because I can take on a little bit more, go home, relax. But also remember, we still need you to come back. So take that rest. Community members are looking for us to show up because they don't have the capacity, right? They're worried about survival. And so if I can ensure that you, team, are not worried about survival, then you can do a better job. So again, the philosophy for hope in my organization and for myself is don't act stupid, just show up.
The couple one-liners you've dropped have been pretty good today. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. And now we're going to turn it over to Doug to look at our first question.
Brandy, thank you so much. Thank you so much to today's panelists for showing up. Thank you to all of you for showing up. Thank you. If you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. If you're watching online, please type your question into the chat. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They take about 30 seconds or less to ask. And what punctuation mark does a question actually end with? It ends with a question mark. Yes, they do. Thanks for that reminder. I'll launch us off with this one. And you mentioned the historic pendulum that swings between the roles of nonprofits and government in filling needs. What can't nonprofits do that government must take responsibility for?
Ooh, that's a good question. And how fortunate I am that it was directed straightly at me. So the question was, you know, can you say the question again? What can only government do, essentially, is the question. Okay. That's a really good question. I think we'll always need a foundational level of support from the government. The old saying is that a community is defined by how they take care of the most poorly of citizens. And so we need to make sure that there's always a stream of funding. But I believe the government can invest in organizations that are seeking to create their own sources of revenue to support the work that we're doing. Anybody else have something to add, please?
I will just add that I think I agree, and I also think that government does need to be in the business of basic needs. There are a few basic physiological needs. This is my current soapbox, is that, you know, food, water, and shelter. And we fund housing and shelter as if it is a luxury, not a basic need. And that is fundamentally a broken piece of our system in America today. Must change. Hope in my lifetime that it does. But I will say that, you know, what's happening this week with SNAP is an example of an abysmal and utter failure of government, because food is a basic need, and the feeling of being hungry, we should not tolerate in other people, that we are abiding that.
My name is Brian Urbanski with the Aubrey Affordable Housing Foundation, and the current theme that I'm hearing a lot of is that our environment right now is really demanding more creativity and outside-the-box thinking, and I've heard collaboration mentioned a few times. Can any of you share current successful models that you have of collaborating with the business community to overcome the challenges that we have now in an era where the federal government and even state governments are reducing funding?
There's so many of them that it's difficult to kind of sit back and think of one, but I think our business community, you mentioned collaboration. Liz and I have the honor of working together as a group of shelter providers, working on raising awareness about that need in our community. We could not have done that without an incredible group of corporations who are partners with us, raising awareness, helping us to shape the message, drive change, being responsive in bringing our legislators together to the table. So that, I think, is one example on the macro level. But today, I was talking to a for-profit business that's helping me think through change management strategies. So I think that these types of partnerships that we see with the business community is one of the strengths of the Columbus area. And it happens whether it's behind the scenes or it's forward-facing.
I could, that it's really extraordinary in Columbus that there are open airways between corporate leadership and nonprofit leadership. And I've been around long enough, about 23 years in Columbus, to see how the corporate community steps up in moments of challenge. The Columbus Education Commission, you know, over a decade ago, and more recently, the Funding Review Advisory Council, they're paying attention to the needs of human services organizations in our community and really digging deep to figure out how we can bring in new sources of revenue for our organization.
I was going to quickly add, so we will always take your money, so give it to us. Thank you. But think about sort of, again, the operations of an organization. And this is where I always go to, right? Because if we can cut down operational costs, we can put that money elsewhere. If you as a business have a really great IT program and you think, hey, I could lend my IT person to help out with some issues at one of these organizations, that is a great way to partner. We have kept a lot of our overhead down because I have no problem asking you for these things to say, hey, can you send someone over to look at the system for us, because it will cost us this much to have a full-time person on staff. So I think about, again, what's already within your organizations, not necessarily dollars, we take them, but again, people that may be able to lend talent and time to help these organizations cut down on overhead costs.
There is something really special that can happen when there's a business need and a human need and a nonprofit need that kind of come together. And we're working with a development partner. They needed on-site childcare at their facility. We have an expertise in doing that, but we actually couldn't take the risk right now of just dropping in and saying, like, we got this. And so we worked with them on how do we phase in our childcare operations in a way that is good for business for us, right? And then also accomplishes their need to serve their residents with childcare. So that's also an example where it's not really a grant structure or the thought partnership of businesses in Columbus being extended to nonprofits, but actually us recognizing sort of a mutual need and a way that we could work together for the outcome that we both care about.
Yeah, I want to share just one from Habitat in terms of, like, there's a need in the private sector for people to be prepared to go into the trades. There is a shortage right now. And so we are a great training ground for folks that are interested in the trade. So we're right now partnering to do workforce readiness houses where students that are learning about the trades in the lab during the day are also coming out to Habitat site, a house within walking distance, to help build a house and learning under superb construction leadership.
Thank you, Brandy. Leonard Schofield asks, this question is for Rachel, but I think it would apply to any of you. Given that many nonprofits depend heavily on government grants and donor funding, how can organizations balance financial sustainability with independence, ensuring they're not just responding to crises, but actually leading long-term systemic change in their communities?
It's an excellent question, but unfortunately, it's pretty challenging because many nonprofits are in the space where your economic supply and demand curve doesn't work, where we are providing services who can't afford to pay for them themselves, and so that money comes from someplace else. And we as a community say that we believe that that funding needs to come from someplace else. So it's more a question of how, with a philanthropic lens and a government lens, which is the source of much of the revenue for nonprofits, how can you find a way to create a sustainable model within your organization? How can you drive those operational costs to work within those infrastructures and models? So, I mean, I find myself in a situation where that a skilled nursing facility and assisted living facility was a social enterprise for us. And that was one of the things that many times you hear as the panacea for governments not funding being insecure or philanthropic solutions. But many times we are stepping into very competitive environments and we were using the revenue and driving it right back into our service model. So no matter what type of infrastructure you've got to be looking, whether it's coming from government sources or philanthropy or social enterprise, you have to have a long-term sustainable outlook that works today and needs to be adapted into tomorrow. But I'm not going to step away from the fact that I believe that government has to be an incredible partner, and I believe that our philanthropic community is going to have to be involved in providing these services going forward, and I'll continue to advocate for that, even if it means that we have to cut back on services until we can drive a greater sense of ownership as a community.
I think we also need to get real about the gap that is here and the gap that's ahead. Michael Corey back in February mentioned that nonprofits in Franklin County received $230 million from the federal government. This money is being chipped away, and the gap is going to be too big for all of the usual players to fill in, corporations, foundations, individuals, fundraisers, all of the things. And so we need to stabilize now, make those strategic cuts, fundraise like all get out. Yes, we need everybody to step up. But I believe we're also going to need to move more fully in, like I've said, into the earned income and social enterprise space to fill this gap. And we need to be nimble as 501c3s in achieving that long term.
I would just add that this is not directly an answer to the question, so I'm sorry if that's also against the rules, Doug. But, you know, as Anne said, what we're anticipating is not, first of all, we have to be nimble. Nonprofits are like the most nimble dollar you can invest and the most efficient dollar you can invest, right? Our profit is mission. We are just an incredible use for your resources. Beyond that, Anne talked about the gap growing, right? And the gap that is ahead and the gap that will get too big. What I'm also concerned about with the federal dollars is that the cost to receive them becomes too high. That is something we are having to grapple with as nonprofits every day. We have 91 women that we house in downtown Columbus. They are formerly homeless and have some kind of have a certified disability. And if the government tells us that we must serve them in a way where they can't actually survive, what are we to do? I mean, this is a real question. If the cost of accepting that money becomes too high, we have to be prepared with the courage and the nimbleness and other ideas to make serving them in a way that is dignified still a realistic possibility.
All right. Well, I really do wish we had more time. This really flies by. But that is all for today. And I'm going to turn things over to Sophia Fiffner.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Central Ohio's nonprofits feed families, house neighbors, and strengthen communities, often filling the gaps no one else can. This week, we explored what it means to lead a nonprofit with courage, even in uncertain times. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Ann Bischoff with Star House, Elizabeth Brown with the YWCA Columbus, Rachel Lustig with Lutheran Social Services, and Denzel Porteous with Stonewall Columbus. Our host was Brandy Alissa, President and CEO of Habitat for Humanity Mid-Ohio. This forum was presented by Nationwide and sponsored by CODA and the YWCA Columbus. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library suggest reading Chasing Success, The Challenge for Nonprofits by Judith Van Ginkle. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.